Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
Hi, this is Katie Kiefer from What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. That was a fun little record scratch in the intro there, David. DJ in the house. We have a new engineer, by the way, at Heritage. Anyway, I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and today we're pleased to welcome back on air. I think this is your third time here, Lucas.
Yes.
Okay. That is Lucas Vulgar, and we're talking about his latest book, Bowl. Vegetarian recipes for ramen, pho, bibimbap, dumplings, and other one-dish meals. Lucas is also the co-founder of Jari Magazine, a new quarterly.
Jari.
That's okay. Okay. Oh, it rhymes with sorry, so yeah. That's fun. So, Lucas, this is your third book.
Yes.
And this is a beautiful book. I know you've gotten a lot of awesome press for it so far. It was in Vogue and so forth. But again, it is a vegetarian book, and you're really good at reverse engineering these hearty staples through a vegetarian lens. Like, so for instance, your first book was veggie burgers, mm-hmm. every which way,
mm-hmm.
and then vegetarian entrees that don't suck or something.
That don't leave you hungry.
So now you've gotten ramen, pho, bibimbap, these traditionally kind of meaty, hearty, soupy dishes, but they're all through a vegetarian perspective. And you just beautifully, it seems, because they all look amazing. You really add a lot of color and variety to these dishes. It's not just one-dimensional, I don't know. So what is your secret here to making these dishes work so well that are known for being meat-based?
First off, thank you. That's really nice of you to say that.
Pho? What? How do you... Yeah.
Well, I think it's... Well, with, veggie burgers, as a point of comparison, I stop at the very beginning. I try not to think of it as an approximation of a meat hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
So with pho, I don't try to think of it as approximating
fake meat. You don't add the
or even
soy
trying
protein.
To get that kind of flavor, really, mm-hmm. vegetarian pho or, and it's all actually vegan pho. But
I'm glad for that.
Yeah. It's a very delicate
fake beef
fare. So you're mm-hmm. you're more playing off those and those top notes, the herbs are really important and mm-hmm. getting the balance and the broth is really important so that it's a lot of vegetarian, if you make vegetarian stock or vegetable stock, if you're not careful, it can be too sweet because mm-hmm. of the sugars and all the vegetables. And so just kind of being careful about preparing that. I mean, it's really, it's just an exercise in balance.
Mm-hmm.
As with most food.
Now, to play devil's advocate, why do it? I know it seems like for a lot of people who hold these recipe or these dishes dear, it would seem like a fool's, task to try to make a vegetarian pho, for instance. So why did you decide to do that?
I guess if for veggie burgers, it's not approximating a meat burger, but it anchors it. Mm-hmm. It makes it familiar for people and familiar for myself. Mm-hmm. And so with pho, you've got sort of similar components, this very fragrant broth, the rice noodles, right. the herbs on top. And then I take it in a lot of different direction based on seasonality and farmer's market inspiration.
So it's kind of apples and oranges. This is a different dish. It's just kind of anchoring you there and bringing you in through your familiarity with these other dishes.
A familiar formula, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, well done, well done. Okay, the other thing is that this book is all about bowls. It's an interesting concept. What have you against plates?
I hate plates. I mean,
there's salad plates, there's dinner plates.
Oh, they all just need to go.
There's chargers. There's what else?
Come Kill on. Your plates. I started out the book. I was really inspired by the vegetarian ramen served at JUCO in Prospect Heights.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It's just completely transcendent and amazing. And it made me really excited to go into my kitchen and experiment. And so I started developing ramen recipes. And then I can't remember exactly what prompted it, but then I was like, oh, I should try out vegetarian pho, too. That might be kind of fun. And then that led to, like, bibimbap. And then at the same time, I was doing what so many people do. I live at home alone, and kind of, like, when you're feeling lazy or you need to fix dinner really quickly, just kind of, like, take all your leftovers and dump them in a bowl and eat it, like, on your love seat.
Sure.
And I was doing that. Leftover and I was just, bowl. Like, realizing that the whole thing, like, the commonality of these dishes was the vessel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's
how I eat, too.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's talking about bowl. Like, it's this, like, new, even, like, a health food kind of, like, it's been buzzing around a bit. Maybe it's a whole grain bowl, maybe something like that. Maybe it has to do with, like, not eating bread as much. You know, a lot of people are going gluten-free. So bowls are just, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the buzziest thing right now.
Totally.
And I hear that bowls themselves are, like, flying off shelves or something.
I know. It's well, this is Michael Harlan Turkel, the photographer, and he was also the prop stylist on this book. But he brought in all these amazing handmade bowls by a lot of local ceramicists. And I had sort of been like a Crate and Barrel West Elm kind of guy before that photo shoot. And then all these amazing handmade, unique, one-of-a-kind bowls. I've sensed, like, I don't want any crappy bowls in my house.
Is this a hearth bowl I see here? No.
It might
be. I don't know. There's just some good bowls.
There's some nice bowls. Yeah. But I don't know. I think the bowl is, it's definitely like not a new thing. I feel like it's been capitalized in a trendy way with like power bowls or what. But the idea of it, what is appealing to me and probably so broadly appealing is that it really lends itself to a component style of eating where you're using a lot of whole foods. And so that helps to eat more healthfully. When you're like, I live alone and often cooking for one, and so it's, I don't know, just kind of like limits your dishes. You put everything in the bowl, and then they also look really good on Instagram.
Yeah,
can't deny that.
That's true. But there's something, you know, it's kind of weird because the average, or the traditional American place setting, you know, the five-piece place setting, does not come with, like, a dinner-size bowl, or I should say, like, noodle bowl. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a staple of the Eastern kind of dishware sets. But it's like a dinky little cereal bowl. So I can see why people are rushing out to get those, you know, bigger bowls.
Yeah. And what do they sometimes call them? They're like the wide, shallow bowls.
Pasta bowls, I've heard, like, or noodle bowls.
Or sometimes like a... Is that wrong? A deep salad plate? Or that sounds wrong.
That sounds wrong. But
edit that out.
Or like people are eating a salad out of a big, you know, bowl.
Yeah.
For salads. And it's... I think it's changing the way people are, or how much people are going to be manufacturing, you know, larger bowls, which were sort of mostly in an Asian, like if you walk into like a Crate and Barrel or something, those bigger bowls are
like the ramen bowls.
Yeah. Like the noodle bowls. I don't know. I grew up with larger bowls, you know, in the household like that for noodles. And I always found it frustrating to go to someone else's house and there's only these tiny little cereal bowls if you wanted to make something.
I like the wide, shallow ones. I feel like that's kind of ideal for this style of eating. And they're often like, they double as nice serving bowls at dinner parties too.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this is like an interesting visceral, step in the way, you know, you can see how America's eating differently over time because we're eating more Asian foods. We're eating more ethnic foods. We're eating more whole grains. And this is being reflected in the vessels, which this book really captures. And how did you learn to make these dishes? Because you're not Asian, Lucas.
Nope.
And you did
Idaho boy.
All these bibimbap and ramen. And it, you have a great primer for like all these, you know, traditional ingredients like the seaweed, the noodles themselves, and how to choose them. Was this just a labor of love and research?
Yeah, it was a lot of research. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time with a lot of different cookbooks, and I ate out a lot and talked to a number of different chefs. And but when it came down, it got to a point where I needed to like just leave that kind of in my brain and then let go of it. And because it's not like authoritative on any of these cuisines that I draw from. It's very much inspired by and just as equally inspired by the farmer's market. Mm-hmm. For me, that's what's really exciting about vegetarian cooking is going to the farmer's market and planning what you're going to eat based on what you find there. So it has that, I guess there's like a little, it has roots in the, some traditional like flavor profiles and techniques, but it's not necessarily like bound by
them. Sure. And this book is really worldly, actually. You know, there's the ratatouille polenta bowl, which looks, again, you know, very fresh farmer's market, veggie inspired. You know, you've got the zucchini noodles, which are always fun, and the black beans and so forth. There's just like a whole variety of cuisines that you sort of draw from but don't totally subscribe to.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
So it's bound by bowls and a love of veggies, you could say. Tell me briefly a little bit about why you started Jari. And I know it's in its first year, correct? And you guys have already gotten an essay in there that was nominated for a James Beard Award.
We did.
Just last week. That is amazing. Congratulations.
Really exciting. That's John Birdsall's essay.
That's way to start out.
I know.
The bang.
I can't quite believe that, really. I've been thinking about, so I'm a gay guy, and I've worked in food for a while. I worked in bakeries and restaurants through college, and then in publishing for a while, and then I've been writing cookbooks for the last 6 or 7 years, and I launched a food business called Made by Lucas, and I've done, like,
mix.
A little bit of everything in, like, the food service industry. And I've always been aware that there's a lot of gay guys that work in food, and especially on the media side, it's largely intended for a female audience, which is not a bad thing, of course. But I've always been kind of interested in what would happen if you created an outlet for another gay male audience, like how the scope of the content might change, how the voice might change. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I've also been kind of intrigued by the legacies of people like James Beard and Craig Claiborne and Richard Olney, who were gay guys, but everyone knows, or anyone who is involved in food knows who James Beard was, but I'm constantly meeting people who had no idea
that
he was
gay.
A gay guy. Yeah. And that just seems like an interesting, like,
that is really interesting.
A lot of under research.
Do you think that that's sort of swept, like, purposely kind of like hidden from like most, I don't know, from the focus of his work or legacy or anything?
I don't know. It's a tough argument because sometimes, who's to say if that is important? I mean, I think that it's important, but maybe he wouldn't have thought it was that important.
Maybe.
And we're talking about food and, like, what does sexuality actually have to do with food when you really get down to it? So there's a lot of, it's like an interesting argument.
And in his lifetime, things were a little different.
Totally. You know, and he was like an eccentric. So it was, you might have just kind of folded up the gay thing in with a whole lot of other things, you know? So it's.
He was a bit of a bon vivant.
Yeah.
That's what you would say.
So we always, with Steve and Alex, my partners in Jari, we often had this argument, but just like a fun sort of heated discussion about when you say gay food magazine, does the gay modify the food or does the gay modify the magazine? And for us, it's like the magazine because the idea of like food itself being gay is kind of, you can only like have that like intellectual conversation for so long before it starts to seem totally ridiculous.
Yeah, no, there's definitely like, it seems, what do you think of the response so far?
It's been great. We've had
it's a niche that hasn't been filled. It's weird to think that, you know?
It is, and it's probably the most exciting part. It's all been very exciting, but one of the most exciting parts is just the community of people who are really eager for it. And so I've met all kinds of great people. I'm constantly meeting people. I'm always trying to, you know, meet with different contributors and different writers and cooks and artists. And it's funny to me how we seem to live in, there's some belief or there's this notion that we're in like a post-gay society because of like gay marriage and all the advances that have happened in the past several years. And still, when I meet with these people, we end up like having coming out stories, conversations. Oh. And it's like, so it's still like, I feel like there's still, it's like a ripe subject.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to have a place where we can put more stories on the page.
I am too. I feel like, and there's been conversations all over the place, like from feminism and so forth, about how a lot of male food writing tends to be really, I guess,
bro-y.
macho and bro-y. Yeah. And like really, I don't know, meaty, heavy, and like a little bit like, there's also some sort of like personifications in food, like, yeah, oh, that's sexy, you know, and like it's, yeah, you hear gripes about that. And certainly food writing, maybe I should name names, but you know, I think we know that, you know, folks like Anthony Bourdain or something like that is like kind of really paved this path. And it was a niche that spoke to a lot of people and still does. And there's still a lot of people who really just, feel like this is their, like this, they are the audience for this and they attach to it, which is great. I mean,
yeah,
so there's plenty there
was
more
one, one of the other things that prompted Jari was, did you ever read in New York Magazine, there's an article called like the, it coined this term, the dudey, which is a dude foodie. It was by Jessica Pressler. And she kind of described exactly what you're talking about with this and but more I liken it to like sports where you can just buy a lot of gear. I know the guys that like ride in circles around Prospect and like $10,000 worth of mountain biking gear. But that approach to cooking that's so like equipment oriented, and it's like these 3 days of fixing a Bosom or whatever.
Ooh,
and
like how
you don't know how to scramble eggs.
Testosterone is in this egg and so forth.
Yeah, exactly. And then I don't thinking like, oh God, all the gay foodies I know are not like this. So what's the term for that? Oh, it's a goodie. Hey, that would be a great name for a magazine, but unfortunately there's already a magazine called Goodie.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad. Yeah.
Jari worked out.
Yeah, Jari worked out. Totally. We're going to cut to a quick little commercial interlude and be right back.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
All right, we're back chatting more with Lucas Volger on his new book, Bowl, and this beautiful cover. Just for folks who haven't seen it and aren't looking at it right now, I can see like three herbs here, right? There's a hot pepper, maybe a fresh jalapeno, mint.
There's some mint.
And is that basil?
There's some
parsley.
Basil, and also some celery leaf.
Uh-huh.
And then there's baby bok choy.
Yeah.
And this little smudge of caramelized spring onions.
It's really beautifully photographed, and that's by Michael Haran Turkel, who's show The Food Scene is also on this station. So
and definitely. Rebecca Pepler styled that. All the beautiful food in here too.
Awesome, yeah. So what is your okay? So it was first ramen that brought you into this particular theme. What did you find like the most surprising that was, you know, to translate, I guess, into a vegetarian style.
I had never been that excited by vegetarian ramen before Chuco because they're often just kind of like a miso soup with an egg and wheat noodles in it. So it just has this sort of not complex flavor in it.
Yeah, like, it should be complex.
And the broth is really, I mean, I see this all the time, and I actually don't know if I'm completely wrong in thinking this, but when people like waste the ramen, like don't drink it all, it kind of makes me angry because that's so good. And especially with like meats of it, it's like hours and hours of preparation. And why would you waste that?
That's where all the good stuff is. Yeah. That's
yeah. And with, I wanted the broth that was the hardest part. And I wanted it to be as delicious as it's supposed to be in ramen. So Chuco has it's just like a completely exquisite broth. It's it's miso. Dashi based.
Okay,
yeah, so there is some miso in there, and then I don't know what all they
kombu.
Put in there. Yeah,
because dashi usually has, and usually miso has, you know, dashi, but it doesn't usually have the bonito, so the dried fish kind of seeped in there.
Yeah, that's. I leave that out in this book, but I'll use like dried shiitake mushrooms or asparagus ends or like corn cobs or other things to sort of infuse it with like nice vegetable flavors.
So really all the stuff that you're going to throw out, asparagus ends, you know, corn cobs, any, like what is one trimming that you definitely not do? Because I hopefully, you know, try to tell folks to save their, you know, celery leaves and like little butts from the carrots and so forth.
Maybe not.
And I just kind of chuck them all in a stock pot. But what else? What's bad?
I feel like squash skin might not be that good, or something that anything that might make it like too sweet. For me, that's with a vegetable stock when it's too sweet with like too many carrots and parsnips. And
yeah, that can happen.
That you just want to try to get the balance out. So I feel like asparagus and corn cobs are sweet, but you only need to like steep them for like 10 minutes. So it's
starchy,
the flavor cleans, comes through really cleanly, really quickly.
So it sounds like making veggie broth is actually quicker than doing those long simmered meat based broths.
Oh my God. Yeah. The dashi is, I hadn't really cooked with dashi or kombu. So it's a vegetarian dashi in the book, but you know, it's based on kombu, a sea vegetable. And you literally just cover it with cold water and let it sit. It's so easy.
Right.
And it's so full of this wonderful, like saline flavor that's really complex and is a nice, backdrop for all kinds of other stuff. And obviously, you know, dashi is like crucial in Japanese cuisine. But that was like such a revelation for me, cooking with dashi and all these different, and now I mean if I don't have vegetable stock, I'd use dashi or
Wait, so am I really dumb? Because after like years of making, you know, regular stock, like chicken stock, whatever, bone stocks with meat, whenever I'm making a veggie broth, I let that pot simmer for hours. Am I just wasting my time? Do I not need to do that?
After like an hour, they usually like do give up pretty much everything. Yeah, vegetable stock is quite a bit quicker.
Well, at least I'm not like, I guess it's hopefully not hurting the flavor.
No,
by
I don't
doing
think
it
so.
Longer. Okay, all right. So, okay, you've written a book about bowls. You've written a book about veggie entrees, veggie burgers. What's your next project?
Right now, I want to focus on, I love new projects, and I love, I try to say yes to every single opportunity, and so, like, Jari was this opportunity, the idea for the magazine was my own, but when I met Alex and Steve, and we all were in agreement about doing it, it was like, okay, this is my chance, and I want to do it. I had launched Made by Lucas, because I was like, okay, there's no product, like, it's a fresh vegetable veggie burger mix that comes in a tub, so you shape it into patties, and treat it as you would. Like,
and you can get it at Whole Foods, right?
You can get it at Whole Foods, yep.
Freezer aisle or fridge aisle?
Buy the tofu.
Buy the tofu.
The meat alternatives.
All right.
So that, and then the cookbooks, I love recipe development, doing the cookbooks, and I feel like I can kind of do that like in the off hours, but right now I'm just going to focus on what I've got.
Yeah, because doing a quarterly magazine, I mean, that's a lot of work.
It's a biannual, but it's still a lot of work.
Oh, okay.
It's a book. My background is in books, and so it's like, it's kind of text heavy. It's beautiful. I don't want to mischaracterize it. It's beautiful and spaced out nicely and everything, but I really want meaty articles that have a lot of value, so
right.
I want
it's
them
not
to
like
have like
a
lasting place on
like
your bookshelf.
Kind of coffee table thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's going that way with a nod from the James Beard Foundation already. Jeez. What'll be next? When does the next issue come out?
So it actually comes out April 15th. We just sent it to the printer the other day.
Awesome. And we will see you at the Food Book Fair.
That's right.
May 1st to 2nd.
First and
at
second.
At the Wythe. There's a great, by the way, Foodiaticals fair within the fair of food magazine. So
and we'll have a booth. Jari will have a booth.
Yeah, always a good way to scope it out. Is there a theme to each issue? Like, will you have a theme for the next one?
First theme was just, what is Jari? So we had to explain the name. Jari comes from this vernacular called Polari that was used in the 20th century, mostly in England by like arts in the arts world, mm-hmm. and as a way for gay guys to identify each other out in public. And of course, it wasn't legal or safe really to be gay.
Okay, yeah.
So in Polari, Jari means food. But so the first issue had this theme of what is Jari, and it kind of sets up the scope of the magazine, and yeah, it just sets up the
it's
scope.
It's an interesting namesake to have to, well, for at the one hand, you know, drawing on this history, but also being, taking that and sort of twisting it by being really open and just putting it out there.
I like that.
Not having to have a secret code name
yes.
anymore.
The next issue, the theme is makers. So we're kind of exploring the, there's a lot of people who've come to us who have different food businesses or whatever skill set, people outside food but are tangentially related, and so it kind of celebrates that community of people doing
cool
stuff.
That's exciting. Like yourself.
Yeah.
Any other... I don't even know of any, because Made by Lucas, your product is so unique because it's, you know, fresh, colorful, and vibrant. You can see all the beads. You can see every single ingredient there. There's like no mystery ingredients. Do you know anyone else who's doing that with veggie burger mixes that you can form into anything?
No, I don't. And I think it's just
cool.
Hard. Like, perishability is really hard in a grocery mm-hmm. store. And I think anybody, if I had more business sense... Then
you're like nobody like should be doing
sense,
it because it's impossible.
Been a little bit discouraged by that. I feel like it's been when you start have a food product, like the grocery store space is just like a really it's a very challenging environment, and people seem to either do something that's really familiar where you have a lot of competition,
yogurt,
okay. jam, cereal, granola bars, or you can do something completely different, and it's fairly easy to get on the shelves that way,
mm-hmm.
And that was my experience, but. It requires a whole new set of educational tools that you have to go out and really find your customer and teach them about your product.
So why didn't you decide to do them like frozen and already formed into those flat little discs?
Because I don't like to eat those, and I don't. Maybe eventually we will have a product like that. For me, they're very vegetable oriented. So 80% of it's fresh vegetables. We produce upstate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We produce upstate, use local vegetables whenever we can. A lot of them are like wonderful store crops. So for a lot of the year, we're able to buy
beets,
locally.
So forth.
Beets, carrots, cabbage, all that stuff.
Good.
And then, I mean, I love to cook. I'm a passionate home cook. And so I wanted something that kind of embraced that culinary creativity.
All right, so we have to educate.
Yeah.
to educate
Get
people.
Get out there, buy some veggie burgers.
To form your own veggie patties, please.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a tough one. And it seems like you seem to challenge conventions and do something new, like with the Jari magazine. Nobody's doing that. I can't believe it. You know... there are a lot of women's magazines. I mean, Cherry Bomb, for instance, they have a show on this network. That's a women's issue food magazine.
I love that magazine.
So, yeah.
I think that's... It just is a little... for me, it would to do a magazine that's going to have so much competition from other magazines,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot that kind of occupy the same shelf. I don't, for me, I'm not, I, maybe I'm just
There's
like
no
less of a fighter.
There's no point in doing another gather journal, right?
Yeah. Which is also, they're all beautiful magazines. They're all really great. It's just, I feel like having that kind of, you have more of an advantage if you can like capitalize a niche
mm-hmm.
and do something that is different.
Now, do you actually make money off of Jari? Or is it a...
Not yet, but we're getting there.
Oh,
we will
awesome.
Get there.
Very cool.
It's a totally passion project. We had a Kickstarter and we launched it with a Kickstarter last summer.
Okay. Yeah. So it's keeping on.
Mm-hmm.
That's really exciting to hear because, you know, these things are hard and I'm sure very expensive to produce. So right on. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. So I guess that's about all the time we have for today. But any appearances we can shout out for Bowl?
I'm going to... So the Food Book Fair will be at the... For Bowl, will be something with the Food Book Fair. I'm going to Seattle to Book Larder and doing an event there on Friday, April 1st.
Sounds like a cool name for a bookstore.
It really is. It's a fantastic bookstore. That's all I can think of right now.
Very cool. Thank you so much for coming on air again,
Thank
Lucas.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right, can't wait to hear your next book, and then we can have a fourth interview on Heritage.
Look for cups.
All right, everyone, check out Bowl, and we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.